Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. We have a special show today here. We're introducing a new member of the New Cyber Frontier cast. We've heard from him before, but he's been on as a guest. But today, Dr. Sean Murray. Welcome, Sean.
Well, thanks, Chris. It's always great to contribute wherever I can, so I'm really happy to be part of the show.
And we're expecting big things from you, so.
I'm hoping. We've got some resources that we're going to add to your program, and I think it's going to really open the door, especially for, you know, some of the target audience executives, what the struggles that, you know, CISOs and Fortune 100, Fortune 500, global companies, we've got access to those resources, and I think that's really going to contribute a lot to our intended audience. So.
Yeah, so we've been, a couple of us here now, we have Abe Thompson, myself, and Miss Gretchen Bliss, who I don't think we've aired one of hers by now, and we have a couple more, so we're really kind of turning this show over to a community of cybersecurity people that have different backgrounds, different things to talk about, and really can take what we've done here with New Cyber Frontier and make it the industry standard, the place to come for your cybersecurity content and information.
Yeah, you know, I follow, you know, a few different things out there in the community, but, you know, the New Cyber Frontier probably has the largest following that I've ever seen, over 27,000 members. You know, it's not geared towards a specific audience. I mean, the content usually is, but, you know, the content provides material for people to take back to have discussions at their boards. Academia can include some of these concepts into their curriculum. It's one of the best programs I know that's out there. That's why I'm happy to, you know, be here and contribute to it.
Yeah, and it started just as that, putting shows together to get experts in the classroom that we couldn't always get in there every time we had students come through. So now, you know, we record a show with some influencer in the cyber industry, and we could take this in repeatedly, you know, and bring that to, you know, more than just one class or more than this set group of students or anybody out there that doesn't even maybe even attend a university, but just is in the cyber industry.
You know, one of the great things for academic is that industry itself has had a challenge over the last, you know, two decades as far as getting current content. So technology changes so quickly. How do you keep up with the curriculum and the content? Because, you know, for accredited institutions, that's a challenge. Mm-hmm. And so having something like this to be able to provide a college professor anywhere in the world as far as what's going on, what's current, who's in the industry, the movers and shakers, what are the challenges, to be able to bring that to the classroom so that is real, supplement that content, that's one of the big advantages here.
Yeah, and but this show, though, we got talking about the pretense and everything, really about you. We want to understand who is Dr. Murray. So give us your short bio here. We can even go longer.
Wow. I don't know that it's short, but I'll try to keep it short. You know, right out of high school, you know, I'm a South Boston kid.
South Boston. I didn't. Now I'll be listening for the accent. You know, I wasn't before.
So you know that I actually have a broadcasting background. So when I went through that school, and we'll get to that. We'll get to that portion, but you know, coming out of South Boston, about 10 years old, moved to the west side of the state of Massachusetts, blue collar kid. So there was no money going to college. So I went right in the Air Force, 1985, I was what they refer to as a nuke puke. So in, my Air Force AFSC was a 463. I worked on nuclear weapons. I was a maintainer.
Nuclear weapons. See, I was Navy and worked on nuclear reactors, so power plants, generation.
Yeah, it wasn't a really a big deal. We replaced certain components, slapped them back together, and put them back in inventory. But yeah, it was really restrictive, and so I signed up for one tour, and when I was done, I came back home, and there wasn't really a lot of jobs in 1989. So I went back to back to work, and my dad ended up getting me a job working construction. So growing up, family-owned construction, always had a job, ended up out in Las Vegas working concrete construction.
Let's take a break here from our sponsors. We'll come back to talk about concrete construction to cybersecurity. Be right back.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
All right, welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. We're interviewing our new host here for New Cyber Frontier, Dr. Sean Murray. And right before the break, we had got to his career to the point where he was concrete construction. And somewhere in here, we turned the corner and we got the cybersecurity. So give us that kind of next piece of where you come from.
So, it's really hot in Las Vegas doing concrete construction. So I figured I had to do something different. Actually, I signed up to a contest for radio DJ broadcasting. And short story is I came in second, got a half-ride scholarship, went to broadcasting school from 89 for a couple of years, got my FCC license, and became a producer for a local morning show and on-air DJ. It wasn't the morning show DJ. I produced a shock jock station, and then of course, as a new DJ, you get all the crappy shifts, nights, weekends, holidays. Anyway, I did that for several years, and that's where you don't hear the Boston, because they
and work and you know what? I hear the radio producer, the radio DJ voice there too, pop right in. So
yeah, it's easy to transition to that. As long as you don't do what the station's called, puke, like puke talk, yo.
What's puke talk?
That sounds 96.3. Oh, okay. Yo, welcome to New Cyber Frontier, like William Shatner style. But anyway, so after that, I ended up meeting a gal. She was stationed at Nellis Air Force Base out in Las Vegas, and we got a close relationship. And I followed her to Germany, and that relationship didn't work out. So I decided to stay. Growing up in Boston, so during the summer, I told you construction, right? So all family owned, South Boston Irish. In the winter time, bars and hospitality. So I had a job, doing that type of stuff in the winter time. So I end up getting a job on base, get an ID card, and I start working, work my way up as the chef at the combined club at Simbach Air Base. And in 1995, the Air Force purchased a point of sale system called Aloha, which is the top point of sale system for all hospitality in the world today. But back then, it was the first time we actually put a point of sales on a computing platform, Windows 95. So I took the time to read through all the manuals, and it took a few weeks, but I integrated all the recipe cards for the bar, the restaurant. We ended up increasing our efficiency so significant, we ended up getting an audit. And so the auditors came in because they couldn't believe.
You're too good on it.
Well, it is, right? So they're like, well, how can you decrease your cost of sales by 50%. We ended up finding that people were stealing from us, people in the warehouse, people on the front line. And what ended up happening is I loved it. They had me go throughout the rest of Europe and integrate these point of sale systems for all the other club systems. So that was my first introduction to real technology, setting up the networks and the point of sales and programming and everything. And I loved it. So I started taking classes at University of Maryland overseas. When I came back from Germany, and then I'm a government guy now working for the Air Force. So I come back from Germany in 2000. And I am the IT director at Hanscom Air Force Base for the MWR, or the services squadron. End up with 500 computer systems in 40 locations in two states, and learned a lot about every type of operating systems, databases, Unix, Unisys mainframes, you name it. So good crash course. Left there in 2004, came out to Colorado.
Just kind of thinking about this, this is just a tinkerer at the finest, right? I mean,
That was
if,
a great
if you get a recommendation for somebody starting out, just find something you're interested in and tinker with it until you can understand it. And next thing you know, they'll put you in charge of all of it worldwide, right?
Well, and that's what happened when I came back. I wasn't expecting to get anything like that type of a job. I figured could start out as a basic sysadmin because I was just exposed to Windows 3.1 and 95 systems, but it was all networking. It was all coax. I mean, back in the day, right? So now I'm exposed to all of this other technology. I'm taking classes. Air Force paid for my undergrad. They also paid, which was a computer information systems, and then they paid for my master's. So I'm going to school. I'm working. At the same time, I signed up to do the MIS program at the school that I graduated from because it was an Air Force friendly school, and they canceled the MIS program because they didn't have enough PhDs to teach it. So now I get to go outside of the network, and I got accepted to Harvard's MIS program. And so I'm like, wow, this is great. You know, it doesn't say Harvard Night School on your diploma; it says Harvard. Well, this Air Force chief who was he was our off-campus director for the school I just graduated from, he calls me up, takes me to lunch, and says, you know, you don't need another technical degree. The big problem that we have when we talk to business owners is they don't understand. So you're talking 2002, 2003 time frame. Mm-hmm. The big problem business owners or leaders have is when they talk to the IT department, everything is a crisis. Their hair is always on fire. They don't know how to explain things in business terms. He says, you don't need another technical degree. You need an MBA. And I'm like, whoa, yeah, that's not what I want to do. Anyway, long story short, he convinces me, it was one of the best.
He convinces you that that's what you want
to
do.
Yeah, and so I gave up Harvard to go back to Western New England College, and I got an MBA with a concentration in cyber law. Back then, cyber law
I didn't know about the cyber law piece.
That was a concentration, but there wasn't a lot in cyber law in 2003. But we had a great professor. He actually worked for the state of Massachusetts, and Mark Quigley. Anyway, I graduated from that program, and fast forward 2004, I come out to Colorado Springs. My wife's still active duty, so I'm following her. And
she came
from
Massachusetts
Hanscom Air Force Base out to Colorado. And end up working out at Fort Carson. I made the change to get paid, so as a contractor out at Fort Carson, managing the environmental systems for all the hazmat on the installation, so environmental reporting and systems maintenance, database maintenance, reporting back up to the state and federal government. And there wasn't a lot to do, so our program manager ends up getting a job as a government guy for Directive of Logistics out at Fort Carson, and the big dogs come out from North Carolina, and they're interviewing people in the warehouse.
What year
for the job.
Year are we at here?
So we're at 2004 time
okay.
frame. So,
2004.
Fall of 2004.
Trying to think, in 2004, the military was just getting to a point where security was on their radar. Huh? This is a
It was the first introduction of what we know as the A140 8570, where they wanted you to have some type of commercial or certification. Now, the Army wasn't embracing that because they didn't want the expense, so they had their own SkillSoft, SkillPort computer-based training, and so I had to go through a whole bunch of that, which is kind of like a Security Plus boot camp. But, you know, I'm a lot more technical. So, again, I spent a lot of time doing training because, you know, maintaining the systems out of Fort Carson was no big deal. Mm-hmm. So the big dogs come out. They go to interview people in the warehouse, and I'm trying to get out to Schriever or back to the Air Force and do something really cool. And so I talked to him, and I says, you know, you could hire somebody, a new site lead, a program manager with some technical skills, because there's really not enough work for here for me. I'm not trying to talk myself out of job, but you know that I want to go out to Schriever or to Peterson. And I said, if you did that, hire a program manager, you could give everybody a raise in the warehouse. You could save some money on the contract. And they looked at me and they nodded, and then they went, you know, I went to lunch with my wife and came back, and my boss is like, I don't know what you said to them, but they want you to be the new program manager. I'm like, I don't know anything about environmental stuff. I said, I don't want to do that. He goes, well, you know, you got to talk to them. So I called, and they said, yeah, we'd like you to take the job. I'm like, yeah, I'm really not interested. And they said, well, we're going to give you this much money. I said, okay, I can do that. It basically tripled my pay.
So interesting. I mean, your progression through the military and continuing from one base to another, what recommendations do, if somebody's looking at a point like you were in your career back then, it almost seems like it's accidental from one to the next to the next. Is there anything you can do to positively say, I'm directing this, or is it always just random accidental in the military?
Here's one of the things that, you know, and here's the complication for me. I'm a military dependent. So following my wife every 3 years, having to start over, can be a challenge.
Uh-huh.
And this was one of those instances, but here's what I tell people. That was an opportunity for me. Mm-hmm. And so you have to capitalize on those moments, and I did, and it turned out to be one of the best things I could do. Now I've got all of this engineering and environmental background because they sent me to school and all these different things. So I understand all the environmental systems and systems that integrate with other systems. And so that was an opportunity that I was able to move forward with. So my advice to people is, yeah, it seems accidental, it's random, but it was an opportunity. And okay, I took advantage of it, and it became rewarding for me.
All right, hold right there. We'll be back right after we hear from our sponsors.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
All right, welcome back to New Cyber Frontier, talking with Dr. Sean Murray, who is going to be our new host for some of the shows here going forward. I was going through your background, military, government, falling into things, opportunity, and your recommendation right before the break was, you know, that's kind of the way things roll there in the military, is you look for that opportunity because everybody's kind of moving every 3 years,
yep,
whether you are a military, you know, active duty or somebody that's moving alongside with them, or I've even seen it in a lot of civilian bases. There's not a lot of people that stay there 20 years.
Right.
It moves quite a bit. So you're always looking for what's that next opportunity.
Right.
That's an interesting thought, is that someone that hasn't followed the military, after I got out of the active duty service, I think I wanted to stay as far away from military as I could. I can't explain that other than just a gut feeling, but there's been lots of times when I've been kind of enticed to be back in that environment.
Right.
And I've found something else instead. So I don't know if it's my thought process or you know, just randomness again, opportunity. But what have you ever thought about, or you're still kind of in the military, in the, you know, government?
Yeah, I actually, so quick transition from Fort Carson, 2006 timeframe. We end up losing the contract at Fort Carson, so an opportunity came open where I got to go with a company called Sparta and go work at the Missile Defense Agency out at Schriever. Mm-hmm. So as a mostly as a tester, so ground test engineer, and probably half-time cybersecurity, or what we call an IA, information assurance guy. So certification, accreditation, scans, system maintenance, all of that type of stuff on the cyber.
And that is just getting military systems ready to be used, making sure they pass all the criteria.
Absolutely.
Explain that a little bit.
So the certification accreditation process is twofold. The certification process is the most cumbersome. So that is the collection of all the system parameters. So have you, do you have plans, policies, procedures in place, the administrative side? You have continuity of operations if it's required. Do you have a change management in place? Do you have configuration management? What is the security posture, vulnerability scans, so on and so forth? What does the network look like? All of this information is assessed.
Checking all the boxes.
Right.
What things does this organization have? By here's a list of what we think every organization should
right.
have.
And there's a standard that you're usually following. Back then it was DICAP, which is the DoD 80-200 program. They transitioned to the NIST RMF risk management framework.
And that's within the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, right? Well, so NIST has been around for the federal government for well over a decade. DoD didn't adopt to it until, like you said, the last 3 or 4 years. But that's the certification piece, is the long pole. That's the all of the collective efforts of everyone to show what the security posture looks like. All of that information is presented to an authorizing official. That's what we call them now. They used to be called as the DAA, the Designating Accrediting Authority. And they basically adjudicate what the certification looks like. And then they provide
and
a decision.
Adjudicate is like make a judgment, making a decision on that.
That's
right?
Correct. So they make the decision based on, do you have any significant vulnerabilities that would prevent or hinder the authorizing official to make a positive decision. They may only give you a temporary,
temporary ATO. Meaning your system can only operate for
the
a
next
year.
6 months or a year
until you do
get rid of these vulnerabilities.
Of
yeah, gotcha. Reduce the risk to the organization.
And what is that magic number? Is there like a way to say here's the amount of risk and here's how you reduce it, or is it all just qualitative?
No, it's actually, you do get to measure it, and it depends on how you categorize your system. So we have test systems, we have operational production systems, and then we have weapon systems. So the more critical the system, the more controls normally that you're going to have, and the vulnerabilities are going to be more significant. But you look at, again, the probability that that vulnerability may be executed, what would be the impact? You know, go back to 9/11. What's the probability somebody's going to fly an aircraft into one of the towers? Well, probably very low. But what was the impact? It was very significant. So you've got to gauge the risk associated with that, depending on how you categorize your system, as to whether or not you're going to allow the authorization of that system to be put into deployment.
And that's just before gets into operation. And then operational security is a whole other side of the house,
right.
From my understanding.
Well, that's
do you work in both sides, or pretty much just in...
So we do both. So I do program oversight out at Schriever for the Missile Defense Agency over a space program. Mm-hmm. And that assessment, so I do oversight, and then so you do program assessment, accreditation, which is the administrative side, and then you work with other teammates, your sysadmins, your net admins, to make sure that they're doing vulnerability assessments, doing patch management, going in and making sure things are looked at every 60 days, 90 days for account access, making sure people are vetted
properly. That's people's passwords, their access authentication. Right. So we just went on a big rabbit hole there, away from Sean Murray to how some of this works. Seems like, it's just exhausting to me, that whole thought process around getting everything working, the high security environment. How does that relate outside of the military to companies and everything?
CISO hat on. So it's interesting that you say that. So after doing the ground test stuff with Sparta for a couple of years, I actually got promoted to a branch chief for my company. So now I'm getting more exposure to the commercial side of the house. So everything west of the Mississippi, if it was counterintelligence, information assurance, that was my responsibility. And we stood up the cybersecurity program for what we know as Reagan's Star Wars program, the core to that, which is, you had Amy Kaufman representing Missile Defense Agency. She's that program, which is referred to as a command communications, battle management, and communications, C2BMC, for short. And after doing that for a couple of years, I decided to start doing things on my own. So I work part-time out at the base. And I do things like consulting for small businesses all the way up to, I have a client where I do CISO services for a $4 billion pharmaceutical company out in Boston. Mm-hmm. And the idea is to advise them on, really, it comes down to risk. If you go from the military environment over to the commercial environment, it actually is a parallel. What you're doing is articulating that amount of risk based on business processes. So I explained to executives, cybersecurity is nothing more than an analysis of your business processes. One of the examples that I give for my small business chiropractor company, I'm sitting there after I got into a car accident. I'm sitting there at this chiropractor that's covered by the insurance. As I'm sitting there, I'm listening to the gal right in front of me at the reception area. She calls somebody, and she's collecting a copay. So she was like, "Hi, I'm looking for Chris." "Hi, Chris. Yeah, this is so-and-so from so-and-so chiropractic. Your insurance payment came through, but I'm here to collect your copay." And so, okay, let me read that back. That's a Visa. Let me read that number back to you. Oh, and this is the expiration date, and here's the security code. I'm writing all of it down. I bring it up to her. And so the chiropractor's a little irritated. She goes, "Well, you see how small my practice is. How would you do that differently?" I says, "Well, let's look at the process. How about instead of repeating it back, you ask them to repeat it back over the phone and you follow along with your finger?" Cybersecurity is nothing more than analysis of all your business processes. 80% of any organization in any industry is automated. How do we address those risks?
When you kind of, the example you just gave, very interesting, comes back to the thing I hear over and over and over again is, we have to train everybody to know how to do this. My take is that training everybody doesn't work. You can train the people who are interested in this, have some vested interest in the organization. But they just train everybody collectively seems like a fallacy to me. What's your thoughts on that? That's what I hear over and over again. Oh, we got to train everybody, got to teach everybody how to do it.
But so we know that's the number one.
We know from our audience that not everybody's listening. Right. It is a certain category. It's a demographic.
Well, so it starts at the top, right? So if you have a strong cybersecurity culture from the board, from the CEO, that trickles down. And if you have a middle manager, all of a sudden you're starting to see there's more significant incidents in research and development than any other business units. Mm-hmm. Tie it to their performance. They may not share the same culture of cybersecurity that the CEO does. And everybody who works for that business leader is probably going to share what the boss's perspective is. So your incidents may be higher in that business unit. Tie it to their performance. Hey, look, these are the numbers.
And I think you hit exactly where I've kind of been, spinning my wheels and everything is, we have a big audience literally listeners like 6,000, 7,000 CEOs across all over the world that because they know they need cybersecurity. So, and the approach is, you know, disseminating that down, come in at the top, make a culture of people who are putting it in their metrics. That's
right.
That's a great way to look at it. That whole issue that there really isn't a big consumer market for cyber topics is a big challenge. I always ask people, how do you start the solution for that?
Yeah, where do you get your information, and how are you using that information productively mm-hmm. in your organization? When one of the things I found compelling, I was just at RSA a couple weeks ago, and one of the things that was being discussed, Warren Buffett. Everyone knows who Warren Buffett is, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he's come out and said plainly, the number one most significant threat to humanity is cybersecurity. That's pretty compelling. And if you're a CEO and you're hearing that from one of the greatest business minds of our century,
mm-hmm.
And you're ignoring that, it might be time to do something else.
So as we kind of pull to a close for this introductory session to Dr. Sean Murray, that is a good cap to look at. Some of the greatest business minds are saying this is the existential question that we need to answer. What's your recommendation for the first steps?
Well, so one of the things I tell executives that's tough to do, but it's a business process. Don't hand it down to somebody else. It's you have to classify your information and your data. It doesn't have to be complex, you know, on the commercial side, highly confidential, proprietary, public. You can have subcategories of that, but we have so many more privacy laws coming that if you don't categorize your information in your data, you can't align that to the systems that are processing, transmitting, and storing that information. So your CISO with your CIO, working with compliance, your legal department, your privacy department, all of them can come together and align that for the organization to reduce risk. But for the CISO...
So the start, though, is to understand what data you have.
Yeah.
What do you do a classification?
And the other piece is understand, it goes back to continuity of operations and disaster recovery, but what are the most critical things that can disrupt your business? I created a model and I published it several years ago called the RIP model. It's a triangle. RIP stands for and there's a C in the middle of that triangle. C stands for criticality. Identify your most critical R, resources, I, information or data, and P, personnel. Those are the things, if you don't have a backup or you don't have a contingency for those three areas, that can disrupt your business and maybe put you out of business.
All right, so that's perfect. End the show with rest in peace, right?
We don't want to rest in peace or pieces. But yeah, the whole idea is identify those most... the critical things, and then identify your most critical information or data and protect it. Intellectual property, privacy data, whatever it is that could disrupt your business.
All right, so thanks for joining today. You'll hear more from Sean, but this might be the most you hear from him personally.
Right.
He'll be interviewing other people, bringing out some good points though, and a lot of the selection of guests will be your call to say, hey, what are the topics we need to hear? So we're standing by to hear more from you, but thanks for joining.
All right, thanks, Chris.
The views or opinions expressed during this podcast are not those of Colorado Technical University.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.